It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Time to bring the bass back. All right, you guys, welcome to this week's episode of the Temple of Hoop podcast. I'm your co-host, Coach Maples, aka Jay Mapes, here with the homie Kings. Kings, what's popping, my boy?
Man, doing solid, man. Finally figured out this mic situation.
Oh. Man, my man, hit them settings up.
You feel me? I can't believe it took this line. I'm sorry, y'all, if y'all been struggling with that volume adjustment, man. But I got it going good now.
We good. I got a little bit of a sore throat. No worry, it's not the Rona. I've been yelling all weekend. We had a tournament in Delta. I had to take over against City. I took over the first chair because the head coach had a family emergency. So my voice is gone. We're going to thug through it. I got my glass of water. Bear with me. So obviously, you know where we starting. COVID, back like it never left, literally tearing up the NBA. We're going to get into the science side of this because I know that's, you know, you study all this and have a different perspective to offer beyond the basketball. Over 65 players in protocols. Nets are probably the most ravaged team. They had guys in there talking about, I didn't even know this dude, and we supposed to play tomorrow, which is pretty hilarious. I want to talk about this on a couple fronts. First of all, how would you rate the NBA's response to the coronavirus or this new uptick? How would you say they're doing?
Man, I mean, it's kind of basically what I would expected. What you see from the vaccine push is kind of basically how the sports leagues are going, and what you'll see, you know, the statement the White House put out, talk about everything's going to stay open for vaccinated and unvaccinated on their own, you know, that type of messaging. But basically, you know, they want everyone to get vaccinated for this reason. I told people March 2020, I had a video talking about, you know, when in the early days, I told everybody, you know, I expect vaccines to be able to act like flu shots, in the sense that you're going to slow down transmission, you're going to curb hospitalization and stop the ability and help the ability for people to fight off the infection. But ultimately, it's going to be they're going to try and make it a yearly type of thing to be able to just boost immunities, to be able to deal with the disease. Because ultimately speaking, it was always about getting vaccinated so that when you do catch COVID-19, because they expected you to get it at some point, that you'd be able to manage it and still be able to function, still be able to be productive and make money for the people you work for. So that's basically what the NBA is doing. You know what I mean? That's basically what they're doing. You're vaccinated, cool. That's why it came out. At those reports where they were like, oh, well, even if we have it, we want to play because we're vaccinated. So we should be fine symptoms wise, clinically wise, as long as we're asymptomatic, we should be fine to play with COVID because we're vaccinated, we're protected. You know what I mean? But the issue comes with this is when we have unvaccinated people who among it. And then obviously you have the crowd. If you have the crowds, that's another big factor. I think why you're seeing, aside from Omicron being able to sidestep, you know, vaccinated status to infect folks, even though it's not more, you know, it's not more lethal as a virus than Delta. Delta's variant was the most lethal virus.
Yeah, I remember Delta was the one. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the most strongest. But the problem with Delta, it wasn't as virulent, so it didn't spread as good. So we, you know, that's kind of a break. Omicron seems to be spreading the best out of all the variants, including the wild type, which is your original COVID-19, but it's not as strong as any of the others. So there's never been a mutation, thankfully, yet, that's both really strong and spreads really well outside the original, which, you know, got contained by the vaccinations, now we have treatments for it, et cetera.
Right. But, the question I want to ask you is, I don't know if this was real or not. I saw a link to an article. I didn't click on it. I was just kind of scrolling. Mm-hmm. I just saw like cliff notes. Is it true that Omicron and Delta could team up to make us? Does that work like that? Was somebody just being funny?
Mutations. I mean, it depends, right?
Okay.
You could have one depending on how Omicron the mutation is. You could have a variant that has both the mutation of similar mutation to Omicron, similar mutation to Delta, to where now it's both very virulent and very strong. But that's not necessarily them fusing.
Like, right, you know I see. Mean? Okay. Fusing.
It's like an independent mutation that happens where one virus is able to get, you know, characteristics of both, and then it's just successful and it keeps reproducing. And then now you have a bunch of viruses that's like that. It's not like two separate ones are coming together to form it. You know what I mean?
But isn't that normal though for viruses to mutate into kind of less stronger versions of themselves? I read that's what happens.
That's generally the trajectory, because ultimately speaking, and this usually, and it's two ways that this happens. You know, when you had a Spanish flu, a bunch of people had to die first, you got herd immunity, and then it started getting weaker, right? Thankfully, in the modern era, you have modern science, so you didn't have to go through that mass, still mass death, you know, when you look at the numbers, but if you look at these numbers compared to Spanish flu, I mean, you had like, 20 to 50 million?
Yeah, not the same scale. Nowhere near the same scale.
When the population was even way less than it is today, we had 20 to 50 million. So way more deadly, right? Thankfully, with modern science and with proper lockdown measures from other global countries being more responsible, they were able to curb the worldwide death rates. You know, the vaccines were able to help fight off infections. It's still understudied in Africa why African nations were not able to have as bad an effect. I attribute it to two things. One, not as much, nearly as much travel, obviously. And two, their immune systems are primed to work in a different way because you have so many different environmental challenges living in Africa. So your immune system operates differently as well. You have a different diet. And all these things play a role into, you know, fighting off the infection and whatnot. It's obviously something that's been understudied because the goal was to push the vaccine.
I think the method thing, I think you raised a good point about, you know, kind of getting back to the money. Which is why I laughed at the notion that they're going to bubble up. I was like, that's never happening again. It was because there was too much money lost on both sides. I think the players took a 30% L on their money, at least, or something like that. The league in general lost a bunch of money, no gate whatsoever. I think, you know, obviously you hope for a disease to be eradicated, but such a, you know, everything was so politicized with the vaccines and the sickness, everybody wasn't going to get vaccinated or whatever, or the other variables that led into it. I think like you said, it's head towards being the flu, where it's a yearly vaccine, and we get to the point where I think players are going to start playing asymptomatic, because they don't have any symptoms. Like you have a fever, runny nose, cough, sore throat. You don't have any of that. Go ahead, you can play.
Yeah,
I think that's where it's headed. And I'm reading the NFL. Does the NFL not even test symptomatic players right now? Is that where numbers are so low? Is that what they're doing? Or
I haven't read if they're testing asymptomatic. I think a lot of leagues have just not been really testing asymptomatic players very often. Until this recent outbreak, then they started ramping it up. But I don't think they were testing as frequently prior. I think that was one of the complaints. But like you hit the nail on the head. I mean, the whole goal of these vaccine push was really just to be able to play through the virus. Like, you know, like I told people, to eradicate an actual virus requires confinement of like real quarantine. You really have to confine everybody who has it, make sure it passes through. And make sure, you know, that virus can never enter the society again. That takes stringent lockdown, stringent quarantine. Having, you know, pseudo lockdowns and, oh, you vaccinated, it's okay, you can go out, whatever. It's still going to be there. And the vaccines are going to always act as artificial selection pressure. And in science, that's, you know, You know, when you talk about evolution, there's natural selection, right? That's just through nature. Well, since with science, with that, with the improvement in science, we have artificial now because we made, you know, antibiotics, all these type of medicines that create pressure for viruses and bacteria to mutate to be able to beat these, you know, to be able to beat these medicines. Like the whole biomedical research is basically warfare against bacteria and viruses.
Right, so it's right.
Like a never-ending war between, you know, can we make a medicine in time to beat this strain of virus? And can they mutate in time to beat this medicine? How quick can they do that? So it's always going to be, you know, we're always going to introduce, whenever we make a new medicine, we're always going to introduce pressure for the virus to mutate. So that's always going to happen. So every scientist knows that. The people in charge know that. So their logic is, can we make a treatment that can help people, you know, not be as sick to where they're overwhelming the hospitals, you know, they're not able to work or they're on the verge of dying. We have to have high ICU units. Can we have a medicine that can help lower those numbers, make people be more asymptomatic, and then be able to just, you know, live through having it? Like it's there, but it doesn't really do nothing to them. So they can work amongst other people who are vaccinated because they're also protected, and you can just still have society going. Like that was the goal. Like that's literally the goal of what they were trying to do. And that's why when the NBA said, oh, we still want to play, even though we're, as long as we're just not asymptomatic, I'm like, yeah, like that was the whole purpose of this. Like, this is where we were heading. Like, none of that surprised me. I'm like, this is where we're heading. Nobody wants to go back to that economic lockdown that had huge repercussions globally. You know, it's just one of those things where people are trying, or it's going to be living with the virus as part of the getting a disease, like how you got the cold, how you got the flu. It's like, nah, I got COVID. Like, it's going to be one of those things.
I got that Rona.
Yeah, I got the. It's going to be one of those things that's going to be a part of society. Like, this is what I said in March 2020, based on understanding how medicine works and how things, treatments work, and how this, how virulent this strain was, disease was. It's like, you're never going to eradicate this. Like, your best bet is always just going to keep it manageable. So I always knew we were going to head to this point.
Yeah, and that was, I think even, yeah, I'm looking at this right now to confirm what Woj said. So I guess the NBA and the Players Association, they made it so they're discussing where you have to be required to sign additional replacement players if you get decimated by COVID. So that's what they passed. Like, and that's your answer right there. Or is they going to shut the league down again? It's no. It's no. I even think once they pass this thing, you're not even going to see any more postponements once they get this passed.
They're not even
postponing anymore. And so
I just think that Omicron just caught them off guard. So now they have to make the structure to, okay, how do we deal when we have asymptomatic players? Because I think they were just pushing it down the line because they didn't really have to confront that yet. But with this new onslaught, it's like, okay, we need to deal with it now because everybody's getting hit and we can't be having this.
Right. I think the sports world, I think it's a little different because these are players who are prime physical condition. Their body's already in shape to handle a disease. I remember like one of the things with coronavirus, if you weren't like physically fit, it could kind of hit you harder if your body wasn't in shape. So I think they're already equipped to handle it better. On top of that, the vast majority of both leagues are vaccinated, like percentage wise. Unless the NFL got a bunch of Antonio Brown vax card checks going on. But so I'm interested to see how, you know, this trickles down into society. So getting back to the basketball side of it, just how do you expect the quality of hoop to look these next couple weeks as these teams filter in these new players, guys sit down, the standings look how they are? Just what are you expecting on that front?
Yeah, man, I'm really just expecting the hoop to just – people just going to have to deal with the hoop being messy. I mean, I know it sucks so close to Christmas. You know, we're not used to Christmas hoop being like this. But, man, I mean, you just have to deal with it because until they implement those new policies, you know, you're just going to have to deal with the, you know, hard exception signees. You know, that's the only way they can keep basketball going. I mean, I think John Rivers had a point when people was like, oh, postpone the games. Like, bro,
What is that going to do?
That's a logistic nightmare.
Right.
You know what I mean? Not, like, you talk about player safety, but you want them to play, what, 3 games in, like, 12 days? Like, that's in terms of NFL. Like, NFL, right. You had teams playing 3 football games in 12 days. Or NBA, you're talking about, like, 6 hoop games in 7 or 8 days. Like, that's not good safety-wise, you know what I mean? Yeah, so yeah, it's yeah, like
– Absolutely, like, absolutely.
If you really for the safety and you talking about, we need this to pass, well, then you just have to shut the season down and cancel games. You know what I mean? The thing is, fans can't have it both ways. Right. You know what I mean? Like, either you really shut stuff down and just don't play, and then it's messing with dudes' money and stuff, or you do what the NBA is going to say, which is, like, we're just going to have asymmetric players play. And it's like Jason had a point, and I said – and I said it was true – he was like, don't care more than the players do. You know what I mean? He was like, the players want to play because this is their living. You know what I mean? This is what they trained their whole life for. It's like, bro, as a fan, you want them to play. You're saying postpone games because you want them to play later. That's not logistically possible. So it's like, if they're going to play, they're going to get vaccinated and be ready to play. Like, that's what they signed up for. You know that, and that's, you just have to let them live with those decisions that they made. You know what I mean? Like you said, these are high level athletes. Like we talked about, everyone talks about, you know, when it comes to immunity, how your fitness level, how much you're active, that affects it. Your diet, that right. affects it. And these are guys who are on the best of the best when it comes to, you know, physically fit, eating properly. For the most part, these guys are at the best of the best. So they're usually the people who can, generally speaking, from a statistical standpoint, the most equipped to be able to handle an infection like this in the world. So, you know, they're gonna want to play through it. And as fans, like, I can't – if the guy said, I need to play because I need this money, like, I can't tell him no. Right. You know what I mean? I can't care for their health more than they do, because at the end of the day, they're the ones who are trying to play.
Right. And I think, yeah, and that's what it down to. I think we both agree is heading towards, if you asymptomatic, no fever, no runny nose, no cough, no chills, all that. Hey, man, get out there. And that's, I think that's what the end game is.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Kind of related, Nets hit the hardest with the most players out. So they brought back, you feel me, Umar with the handle. He's back. Ironically, he had the test. He is positive with COVID. And so he's in a protocols after being back for a day, which was wild. So how do you think that works with Kyrie being a part-time player for the Nets, which is obviously, to me, it doesn't matter anyway, because they're playing with a bunch of guys now who haven't been around because they got half the team out with protocols. But when they get going, this is a long way away. I just imagine, you know, they're the number one seed now, but let's say they got a swing game 6 in a 3-2 series on the road and he can't play. You know what I mean? Or if they get him on the road against somebody, he can't play the first 2 games. Danger, you know, going 0-2 series. So how do you think that works with him being a part-time guy? And do you see it changing at some point?
I think Biggs had a great point with how it is. It's like, it's one of those things where it's like, I think, you know, a lot of people expected Kyrie to cave. He's not caving. I don't think he will at any point either. I think at this point he's shown he's willing to be, you know, all in for this cause. I don't know. Maybe, I mean, it's still a lot of time before the playoffs, but he's shown no desire to get vaccinated. And the Nets have said, okay, well, we need you because we're trying to win a championship. We're trying to protect our players' health. And Biggs had a point. He said if Harden was Harden, which was MVP Harden, which was top five player in the league Harden, they probably would have traded Kyrie already. You know what I mean? They probably would have been like, we're not dealing with this. And I think that was their mentality going into the year was, let's see how good Harden looks.
Yeah.
Let's see how good this team looks. That's why they were like, oh, no, Kyrie, don't even buy playing. Because they were like, let's see how good everything looks right now. Harden looks like a shell of himself. So the owner is just like, yeah, you got to play, bro. Even if it's half the games, we need you to play. Because the second superstar we got, I mean, the third superstar we got, and the second one right now, isn't performing to a standard, so we kind of need you at this point.
Yeah, I think Harden's play definitely affected. I think just all the guys in the protocols affected it, and on top of that, they're paying him anyway for road games. Yeah. So they just like bring you behind. No, I just found it odd. He tested positive as soon as he gets back. That was kind of crazy to me. As soon as he went through the protocols to returning, that was kind of wild to me. And we'll see how a lot of this goes. 65 guys in the protocols. They're going to have me and you out there on Christmas Day at this rate. Man. Crazy, man. So I feel kind of bad, man, because Christmas Day is usually the NBA's coming out party. Season gets real. It's all high-quality hoop. Hopefully some of those vaccinated guys can return two negative tests before then and get back on the floor and keep the slate. Like, they got the – Lakers got a bunch of guys out with COVID. In addition to AD, we'll get into that later. Warriors, Wiggins, and Poole went into the protocols. They got a rematch against the Suns. That game's going to mean a lot, a game apart in the standings. So, you know, it's just a lot on the line, with those Christmas Day games. And on top of that, it's a marketing. I was talking to somebody, I was like, man, that John Madden documentary going to have higher ratings than them Christmas games at this point.
Oh my God. They're gonna have the G League Christmas special, man.
That's what I'm saying. It's gonna be wild. So kind of back into the non-COVID stuff. Minnesota Timberwolves, shout out your team. Won four in a row. They are in the eighth seed right now. Half a game behind the Lakers, who are in seven, just ahead of the Mavericks at nine. So after the Laker game, when the Timberwolves dominated the Lakers, a game the AD got hurt, Kat said he's the best shooting big man of all time. That sent me down a research foxhole. Obviously, my pick is Dirk. So this is Kat. Kat is at 42% from three on 6 3-point attempts a game, which is top tier elite. That's high volume.
It was like that at eight, I think, last year, 2 years ago. So
it's like that. But this, I think at this, when you had it at eight, it was at around 39.
Yeah, 32.
But this is at 6.3-point attempts a game, 42% from three. Dirk's best year was 42%, and that was only on three attempts a game. And his high in the season was – four attempts a game. So Dirk's had about 39% for his career. That was my one pushback, was going to be Dirk probably.
Yeah.
Here's my thing with Cat making. I don't mind, like, he's the player. That's his guy. He's entitled. Like, I'm like, you respect that from the player. On my end, I just got to see it. I seen Dirk bury too many win too many playoff games, you know what I mean, with the shooting. I feel like it's hard for me to give you the leeway as an all-time skill if you don't do it in high-leverage situations. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where I am with that. But I don't think, from Cat's vantage point, I don't think it was a wild take at all. Like, he's really shooting the leather off that thing this year. So where are you with Cat saying he's the best big man shooter ever?
I mean, statistically, I see why he says that.
Right,
it's
yeah,
hard
right.
It's hard to deny him from a stat standpoint. But obviously, when you have guys who – been around the game and watched guys like Dirk and how they got busy in an era where, like you said, you know, dead ball, you know, less focus on shooting from the perimeter guys, let alone the big men. When you see guys like Dirk and the type of shot he had that was unguardable, It's like you think to yourself, man, if he took the amount of shots Cat took, who's like, it's hard to say he wouldn't be doing that.
Yeah, I'm a little older than you. I remember the discourse. We saw Dirk come in the league with that shooting ability, and the discourse around it was he needs to post up. Like, that just would never, like, if a guy could shoot like that, they'd be like, they need to get him like 10 threes a game. Like, it's just amazing how basketball talk. Remember any big man?
Exactly.
I remember it was him, and then it was Serge Ibaka. When Serge started taking threes, like, everybody was like, what is he doing? He needs to get in the post, blah, blah, blah. Just crazy how basketball talk has changed, where we would obviously lean into all that, especially with Dirk, who was elite at it. I remember the top tier basketball minds were like, oh, he's a power forward center. He needs to be in a post. Like, instead of leaning into that shooting ability.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's the reason why Brooke Lopez wasn't a three-point shot chucker till, you know, he got to Milwaukee damn near, because they're like, bro, you can shoot the three. And it's like, you know, guys like Mehmet Okor, for example, was a great three-point shooter for a big man, but he couldn't take that much again because of just the play style.
Right.
It's like they just wouldn't let those guys take shots. If you have Mehmet Okor in today's game, he's taking six threes a game.
Right.
And then, like, it's that's why I understand when people push back and they're like, it's like for them, they saw Dirk do it at the highest level. So it's like for Cat, it's like you have the stats. Until we see you go in the playoffs and do it at the highest level against all types of the coverages, we can't give you that just off the stats. So I think that's what people who are pushing back are saying. But statistically, can't really deny it.
I'm saying
it's, but I
think he's like, he has like three or four, not to this level. This is his best year shooting wise, but he's got like two, three, four seasons where it's like high 3-point percentage on high volume. It's like, this is not like new to him. Like, he can shoot.
Mm-hmm. So it's really not. I mean, look, statistically, Cat is the best big man shooter ever. Statistically speaking, just straight off statistically speaking, but legacy-wise, we all know legacy more than the numbers, so that's just what it comes down to.
Yeah, if I got to have a big, take a shot all time, I'm definitely going with Dirk. I'm about to be on.
It's,
like, I'm
it's
going
hard for anybody to not go with Dirk. Yeah.
Right. All right, man, so a lot going on in Lakerland. First of all, one of the many teams ravaged by COVID. So Russ was able to come back because he got two negative tests. But Reeves, Malik Monk, THT, the coach, Vogel, just ravaged by COVID up and down. On top of all that, freak accident. Guy falls on Anthony Davis after, you know, tussling with LeBron. I'm glad AD was smart enough to pick his leg up, because that could have been way worse if the leg stayed on the ground. But it's just an MCL sprain, and he's out for, they said, evaluated in 4 weeks. So that's probably at least a month and more than that. Hey, how do the Lakers, first I want to tell you, how do you think the Lakers need to adjust first? Secondly, is there a roster move they need to make, whether it's trade or free agent, to survive this next month without him? Keep in mind, Lakers do have the toughest strength of schedule left in the NBA going forward. So how do they have to play on the court? And is there a move they need to make, free agency or trade-wise, in your opinion?
First of all, hope Dwight gets back. That's number one. You know, have him back so you can have a real formidable big to play. Man, they just need to stop. It just comes down to, they have to stop being cheap. They gotta stop these politics games, bro. Like people keep asking, well, why is DeAndre on the team? Why is this guy on the team? It's like they're on the team for two reasons: politics and the owner don't want to eat their contracts because it's guaranteed. You know what I mean? It's too, you're in the luxury tax, so everything becomes more expensive. So it's those two things now. But at the same, but like I always say, you can't be cheap chasing championships. You know, people want to talk about how much sense it makes to spend a certain amount to keep Caruso. Well, look, Dan Gilbert had to overpay for Tristan Thompson, J.R. Smith, Tom Shumpert, et cetera, et cetera. But they were in the finals every year, because when you're in the cap, there's only so many moves you can make to get better. And it's like, you have to retain everybody who's quality to give yourself a consistent chance of competing every year. And that's if you want to win for real. You know what I mean? If you really want to win for real, like, that's just what you have to do. I mean, that's what the Warriors did. Even when they were bad, they ate that luxury bill. And guess what? Now they're back to being on top because they ate the bill, kept trying to retain and get good players. And now guess what? A lot of guys come back healthy. They make smart moves because they're not worried about the tax bill. And now they're back at the top. Like, that's the only way you can win in the NBA. You have to be willing to spend money. You have to. I don't understand how, like, I don't understand why fans default it with homerism is just to accept every move that needs to be. I mean, I get it. There's people who over criticize all that, but like, bro, you can, when you clearly see somebody, people are just willing to let go of good role play, solid role players who you know are championship quality, you know, help your team go because they don't want to pay. Like, at that point, you have to question how much that somebody wants to win as a front office or as an ownership, not front office, but as an ownership. How much do they want to win? And you're clearly seeing by the fans complain about why is DeAndre still on this team? Well, the owners don't want to spend money. That's just what it comes down to.
Man, so here's where I am with it. I agree with you on Genie maybe not being the Chiefs, but they did say that the extra players now aren't going to count against the salary cap. So there's no excuse for her now. Her and Rob to bust a move now.
But that goes to point number two, the politics.
Right. So on the court, here's where I am. Offensively tonight, they lost to the Bulls late. Offensively tonight, the process wasn't bad. I think they went centerless a lot without Brown, which against the Bulls worked because they're only big as Vooch, so you can match the minutes and, you know, go centerless a lot and still not get killed on the glass. My thing is, you got DeAndre 20 minutes. I know Dwight is out, so that there was just a nasty 20 minutes on both ends when DeAndre played. I think, like, they won the game in the minutes he didn't play. You know what I mean? So, like, I don't understand that signing. I never will. How do you feel? Does the AD injury, does that put more pressure on you think, in Europe? And this is what I'm floating out there, to get a Miles Turner deal done.
Yeah.
That was in my head.
Yeah, and I think I was always leaning towards, I don't think the Lakers really want to press for a wing. I really think they view AD as a four for whatever reason. I think that's where AD's minutes are going to be. He's always just going to be a hybrid 4 and 5. I think that's just going to be his career until he gets so old and he can't be as mobile as he used to. I mean, he already looks like he's not that mobile anymore, but they want to keep him at that 4 and 5 spot. And, you know, I just don't see them passing up Miles Turner. First of all, when people ask for Jeremy Grant, first of all, I think teams actually want Jeremy Grant because of his profile. So there will be a team that can actually outbid the Lakers to get Jeremy Grant. Like, let's say, for example, Atlanta Hawks were like, hey, we'll give you a Horford, Cam Reddish, and these amount of picks for Jeremy Grant. I mean, the Pistons are not saying no. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like, they give them a first, you give up Horford, you give up Cam Reddish, or just a first and Cam Reddish for Grant. Like, they're not saying no to that. You know what I'm saying? So it's like any team who wants Grant, who's a competitor, who hasn't given up their pieces for big trade, they can outbid the Lakers. But Miles Turner is so gettable in the sense that they've been trying to trade, like we talked about this on the episode already, they've been trying to trade Miles Turner for years. And most teams don't want to overpay a center and value that center that highly.
And that was crazy. They turned down the number 4 pick for him also. So a lot of that was on Indiana's end. So I remember that. I got that offer with number 4 pick for him and didn't take it.
What year was that again?
I forgot. It was a couple years ago when his stock was like high. It was super high.
Yeah, that was the exact. I remember that was when his stock was at the highest.
Right.
You know, when a lot of people were before he got that contract.
Right. Yeah.
Before he got that deal. And then when he got that deal and his play started to decline, everybody was like, whoa, hold on. You know, that's, you know what I mean? That's maybe this is not what we want. So, but his stock has been very low for the past couple of seasons, and it's just been tough to move him. So I think with how the Lakers operate mentally and with how gettable Miles Turner is, and I think the Pacers actually value THT because they're trying to blow everything up, Brogdon included. So they'll need young, cheap replacements as well as picks. I think they will actually want that type of trade to happen. And I think Miles Turner helps them. I think Miles Turner helps them because I think he shores up the front court. I think he helps take a load off LeBron and AD in terms of covering space and rim protecting. And yeah. I think that helps them. I think it helps them be more committed to perimeter defense. And I think with those three being more committed, I think also helps Russ too, because now Russ can play his point of attack perimeter defense knowing he has two erasers behind him instead of one. And whoever the two guard is who's a floor spacer, now that guy becomes more of a positive defender playing in front of three, great front court defenders who are now all helping each other out. So I think their defense automatically gets better. And Miles Turner can shoot the three, so he's going to help them offensively still space the floor.
On top of that, 90th percentile plus as a role man this year. And you add in that with LeBron and Russ, who are very good, high usage pick and roll players.
And you have to respect the role, and you have to respect his shooting. So you can't just paint on Miles' role because he can shoot. So it's great action for them. I think a lot of people say we don't need a center, but I think people are saying that because, again, and this is a thing with big men that I don't like with people. Like, I'm a one big guy. You know me, I've always been on that. But when you have bigs who can actually make two bigs work and who are really good and really versatile, you have to take them. Like people are saying, oh, we don't need a big, so I don't want to trade for Miles Turner. Like, that's you talking from a generalized statement. That's not you actually analyzing Miles Turner as a player and saying with the Lakers. You know what I mean? It's like if you were on the Cavs, you say, oh, and which a lot of us did have this before we were proven wrong. It's like, oh, well, you can't play Mobley and Jared Allen together. Oh, yes, you can. You know what I mean? Like, it's yes, you can play them again. So it's like you have to look at the type of big man you're playing, right? That's what you have to look at, not just say, well, we can't play two bigs. No, you can't play two certain types of bigs, but if you have two unique bigs with two unique skill sets that are complementary, yes, you can play those two and you can win. Like, you have to look at the type of big you are playing. That's the important thing.
Yeah. Ooh. Man, my thing was always, I'm with you, one big, space it out for LeBron, old school, let him survey the floor, make the right decision, get guys good shots. But if you're going to lean into the two big thing, you might as well put an optimal, do it to the best of your ability instead of these cheap rentals. This is funny because they still have not been able to replace Damian Jones.
Bro, that's
that was so crazy. Funny. He literally
and he had a huge game today. Somebody showed me like 23 or 28 on 19
they minutes. Have not. He shot. He was an incredible lob threat. He was a good weak side help defender. He just wasn't a name. So that literally threw, but they still haven't been able to replace that. Didn't he shoot like 90, like 88% as a Laker?
His energy was crazy. Yeah. He was rolling, opening up roll lanes, active on defense, really playing his butt off. And they said, nah, because your name is Damian Jones. Like, that's just a mark of terrible. That's just terrible GMing. Like,
It's funny really because weird. You look at the Lakers front office top to down, you would give the scouting portion of it like an A+, right? They always find somebody like THT, Reeves. Before that, they got Kuz late. They got Clarkson late. So that they find guys late, but just I think it's fair the last couple of years to kind of criticize the transaction part on the fringes, like looking at it fairly. So, and like you said, a lot of it is maybe genies being cheap. So it goes hand in hand. Anyway, we'll see how the NBA responds to the COVID. Like I said, they just dropped, I think, hold on, I just got an alert from Athletic. There we go. Teams allowed to sign one replacement player for each player under contract who tests positive. There we go. It's official. They just passed it. There you go. Yep. So it's set in stone. Anyway, We'll see how this goes, man. This is a crazy time. I think you're right, man. They're heading towards, if you asymptomatic, go ahead and get out there, man. They'll have these fans. If you catch COVID after this game, we are not liable. That waiver will be on the ticket purchases, and they just going to let it rock.
Man, that's really it. They going to keep the show going, man. Right. That's all these sports leagues, all these entertainment things, they keeping the show going, bro.
Right.
That's what it is.
Anyway, make sure you hit that subscribe button. Get the automatic downloads every time we drop once a week. Follow It's Kings Brown Twitter, myself, JJMaple55_MST. Keep dropping those ratings on the podcast. Kings, unlock the unlock the volume settings. So we good. We got the same levels.
I don't know why it took me this long to get to this point. Oh my goodness. Well, I mean, at least for y'all, the quality of the show will go up.
Yeah, man. This dude is on his way to being a doctor. We gotta get that right, man. We gotta understand this text.
All right. I'm like, bro, I'm a PhD candidate and I just fixed my mic after 2 years. Come on, man.
Yeah. All right, y'all. Thank you for tapping in. Y'all be safe. Take care of yourselves. Stay away from that Omarion variant. And we are out of here.
Peace, y'all.